This is part two of a three-part recording, Nick Motzke discussing the testimony of Barbara Forrest. It was recorded by the National Center for Science Education on October 5th, 2005.
But these kinds of discussions of Barbara Forrest's credentials really started to get objections from the plaintiffs. And the judge generally seemed to side with the plaintiffs because the defense was not examining Barbara Forrest's CV and questioning her credentials on those areas. They didn't seem to be asking if she really had specialized knowledge. Their arguments seemed to basically go to questions of bias, questions of objectivity, and those are the kinds of things that can be brought out on cross-examination, but they're not really reasons to exclude an expert for not having specialized knowledge. So essentially, late in this qualifications process, it seemed that Barbara Forrest was going to get qualified. The judge seemed to make it clear that he was not getting what he wanted from the defense, and he exercised considerable patience and gave them several shots to give new arguments, but eventually he seemed to say that, well, I think I've heard enough, and this pretty much ended the first morning session. Barbara Forrest was qualified, and then we took the morning break, and Barbara Forrest moved on. After the break, Barbara Forrest moved on to give her main testimony in direct examination. So let's talk about that. Basically, Barbara Forrest, the overall structure for her testimony was to do it chronologically, the history of the intelligent design movement chronologically. And they began by discussing her basic opinion, is intelligent design creationism, is intelligent design a specific religious view, and Barbara Forrest answered yes to that, so she introduced her basic opinion. And then this was supported by going through the history of the intelligent design movement. And this began back in creation science, especially with court decisions that ruled creation science unconstitutional to teach in a public school classroom. The two famous court decisions are McLean v. Arkansas, which was a district court case, tried in 1981, decided in 1982, and that was an incredibly thorough case, and many people are comparing Kitzmiller v. Dover to McLean v. Arkansas because both cases had a big slate of expert witnesses. Both cases were really the first major case on a particular creationist legal strategy, creation science or intelligent design. Both cases were extremely thorough, and we'll see how the decision comes out, if the decision is similar or not. It would be nice, for example, if the judge issued a detailed opinion reviewing the facts of the case, reviewing the science, reviewing the history, like the judge did in the McLean case. But you never know how exactly a judge will rule. The other famous case was Edwards v. Aguillard, which was started in 1981 at the same time as the McLean case on the Louisiana Balanced Treatment Act instead of the Arkansas Balanced Treatment Act. But that case wound its way up through the appeals courts and eventually ended up in the Supreme Court, which decided on June 19th, 1987, that creation science was officially unconstitutional. And so Barbara Forrest's basic point in raising these decisions, there was an objection, you know, the witness cannot make legal arguments to the judge. The judge is the one who makes the legal arguments. But the counter-argument was simply that these cases are important to understand the history of the creationist movement and the history of intelligent design. They are important historical facts. And so on that basis, this testimony was allowed. Because essentially intelligent design arose directly after this 1987 Supreme Court decision. And the real question is, was it creationism? Was it just a new label for creationism to attempt to get it into the public schools? Barbara Forrest began this historical period by looking at the Foundation for Thought and Ethics, which is the group that produced Pandas. It was founded in 1980. She quoted from their founding principles and their primary purposes, showed that they were clearly a religious organization, and not just any religious organization, but an organization whose mission was to spread the faith, which is fine. Every group has a right to do that if that's what they want to do, but such groups are generally not ones that produce books for public schools, which is exactly what FTE has been attempting to do. Not only have they produced the book Of Pandas and People, but they've also produced a sex education book and an American history book, both of them I have not seen the sex education book or the history book, so I shouldn't characterize them. But I suspect they take sort of the conservative evangelical Christian view on things, but interpret it for public schools. That at least is the case with pandas. So she began by looking at FTE in 1980, founded by John Buell, who had previously worked for groups like Campus Crusade for Christ and Probe Ministries. He and Charles Thaxton started FTE in 1980, basically to produce a high school textbook. And they worked on this book for almost 10 years before it was published as Of Pandas and People in 1989, as the first book to systematically use the term intelligent design. So they went through that in a lot of detail. The key thing that Barbara Forrest introduced at this point, which has never been exposed to the public before and which was only discovered in the course of this case in the last few months, was drafts of the book Of Pandas and People. It turns out that 5 drafts were produced when a subpoena was issued to the Foundation for Thought and Ethics. These drafts had never been reported anywhere. Various people like Larry Witham and Thomas Woodward, who've written histories of the ID movement, mentioned that that pandas had been worked on for years and years, but they never detected the fact that pandas was originally written as a creation science 2-model book. This was something that kind of came out early into our investigations into the origin of pandas in this case. And based on these investigations, the legal team issued a subpoena for these books in case they still existed. It was not known whether or not these books existed, but it turns out FTE had kept these drafts. And on subpoena, they attempted to quash the subpoena, as is their right. However, this was eventually denied. And to their credit, they complied with the subpoena and produced these drafts. I'll just list the drafts. They were Creation Biology, 1983, Biology and Creation, 1986, Biology and Origins, 1987, Of Pandas and People, 1987, another version of Pandas and People, 1987, and then finally the first version of pandas was published in 1989. So Barbara Forrest looked at a few quotes from these drafts versus the published version, and of course, the famous one is, intelligent design means the various forms of life began abruptly with their features already intact, fish with fins and fingers, birds with feathers, beaks and wings, etc. That's more or less an exact quote. I pretty much have it memorized now. So the quote in pandas says that intelligent design means abrupt appearance. The quote, of course, in these early drafts is, creation means abrupt appearance by an intelligent creator with their features already intact. So it's the same sense, and they've switched out the words. Barbara Forrest was then asked, well, is this a unique circumstance, or is this systematic? And in fact, it's systematic, and the switch occurred between the two drafts of the 1987 version of Pandas and People. And she put up a graph to this effect with word counts of the words, cognates of the word creation and creationism, and cognates of the terms design and intelligent design. And between these two drafts, essentially, the counts just flip. You'll start out with 200 citations of the word creation in the text, and between the two 1987 drafts, that'll drop to almost zero, and the word design or intelligent design will take over with hundreds of uses of that word. That was quite dramatic. Now, one important point was, well, why did this happen then in 1987? And so these drafts were plotted on a timeline using internal references to dates, and it turns out these two pandas drafts came after the Edwards decision. They both referenced the Edwards decision in a footnote, so we know they came after. And so on a timeline, you have books, creation, 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 then you have the Edwards decision, then you have one draft that mentions creationism, and then the very next draft mentions intelligent design. So that's when the switch occurred. Barbara Forrest was not asked why this change was made. That requires speculation into the minds of the writers, which she has no direct access to, but the implication seems pretty obvious. This was her reaction to the Edwards decision. So that was about the morning testimony. That itself is pretty devastating, and that's the pretty new thing. They broke for lunch. Barbara Forrest in the afternoon talked about basically the development of intelligent design since pandas, and this gets into the modern intelligent design movement, which includes many of the people involved in pandas. The authors of pandas as we know them include the two listed authors, Dean Kenyon, who wrote an affidavit for the creation scientists in the Edwards case in 1986 and defined creation science just like intelligent design is defined today. Percival Davis, who was a young earth creationist, wrote young earth creationist books and articles and then co-authored Pandas. Charles Thaxton, who worked at the Foundation for Thought and Ethics, wrote an essay called Why All the Fuss About Creation and Evolution in 1983. He became the academic editor of Pandas. Next up is Nancy Piercy. She is also a young earth creationist. She was a longtime contributing editor for Bible Science Newsletter. And in fact, this didn't come out today in testimony, but Nancy Piercy wrote the overview chapter for the book Pandas, and she republished big chunks of this chapter in three issues of the Bible Science Newsletter in 1989. These were hiding in NCSE's archives, and we came across them accidentally during the course of investigations for this case. And huge chunks of the text are paralleled exactly in the Bible Science Newsletter, which is a young earth creationist publication dedicated to a young earth, special creation, etc. And the interesting thing about the version in the Bible Science Newsletter, of course, is that you don't have to read between the lines. Nancy Piercy says straight out, these arguments are an argument for special creation. If you want to know more about this, go to the Panda's Thumb blog and look for one of my recent posts on, if you search on Nancy Piercy or the Bible Science Newsletter, you'll see a comparison that I posted there between the published version of Pandas and the Bible Science Newsletter version of Pandas. So that's four authors of Pandas. The first three are the official authors. Nancy Piercy is not listed as an official author, but she was an author of Pandas. Another author is Stephen Meyer, the current director of the Center for Science and Culture. He co-authored the note to teachers at the end of the book. Another one is Mark Hartwig, another longtime intelligent design proponent. He also co-authored the note to teachers. Yet another one is Michael Behe, who wrote about half of Chapter 6 of the 1993 version of Pandas. And there may be many others that we don't know about people who wrote parts of Pandas. John Buell wrote parts of Pandas, basically as an editor. And many of the other big names in intelligent design are listed as reviewers of the book Pandas. So, and people like Philip Johnson are cited in the text. Philip Johnson's book, Darwin in Trial, is cited in the text.